You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome back to the Horse Healthcast. I'm Ashley Lecomte-Lozich, head of R&D for Smart Equine.
And I'm Jenna Boss-Garden, manager of digital marketing for Smart Equine. And coming up on today's show, we are talking about eventing. So the Kentucky 3-Day is coming up and our own resident scientist eventer right here, right now. And it seems like a great time to learn more about what is essentially, I think, an equestrian triathlon.
Woohoo! And while we're not quite to the Kentucky 3-Day yet, I'm still so excited to share more about this sport, some of the key riders that we as a company support, and what makes my absolute personal favorite of all time discipline I've ever tried so special.
Smart solutions, trusted voices. Your source for equine health and wellness. This is Horse Healthcast by Smart Equine. The discussions in this podcast are intended for educational and informational purposes and are not intended as veterinary advice. You should always consult with a licensed veterinarian or qualified equine health professional before making changes to your horse's diet or care plan. Hosts and guests cannot guarantee the reliability, accuracy, or completeness of the information shared, and as such, these discussions are not a substitute for veterinarian or professional guidance, and any actions you take are at your own risk. Products discussed on this podcast are not endorsed by Smart Equine and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure any medical issue.
Okay, Ashley, I, if we didn't already know this, was born, bred, raised as a hunter-jumper girly. So I have a little bit of understanding from what the 3-day is from having gone to it before and watched a whole bunch of it growing up. But you as an eventer, can you explain, like, broad level overview, what is eventing?
Yeah, sure. So one, I'm like very, calling me an eventer is very kind. I'm certainly like a low-level amateur. I'm a weekend warrior eventer, especially now with a kid. So like, this is like my fun thing. I am by no means, you know, like intense in the sport, but I grew up in the pony club. So this has kind of been my discipline since day one. So the 30,000 foot view of eventing, it started off as, you know, with military roots. And it started off as a sport that actually only military men were allowed to participate in.
Oh.
So from like the introduction of eventing to the Olympics in 1912, only military enlisted men were allowed to participate until 1948. And then civilians were allowed, but women weren't even allowed to participate until like the early 60s, which is so crazy.
Wow.
So yes. Yeah. So it has roots in the military, and that has a lot to do with why the phases were created the way that they were. So it's, you know, a very unique, like I loved when you called it a triathlon, a very unique triathlon of sorts that are putting a horse to test in various different ways, right? We're trying to, we have dressage, cross country, and show jumping. And depending on the format of your show, sometimes cross country and show jumping are flip flopped, but they all have different purposes in demonstrating horses' different abilities.
And so those are, just being super clear, those are the three events of 3-day eventing, which is like the technical, like long government name for the sport. Like we're going to call it eventing, but it's 3-day eventing. And the three events over the what could be 3 days are dressage, cross country, show jumping, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, in today's method, yes. Like back in the day when like the endurance test was like long format, it was a little bit different. But I guess we can get into the nuts and bolts of that later. But yes, I suppose in a perfect world, 3 days in the FEI, you'll certainly see it over 3 days. In the USEA, most of them are concentrated down to, some of them even have 1 days. So, but yes, those are the three phases. So dressage is, you know, the pretty ballet that you're supposed to make look effortless. In my world, dressage is what I have to get through to do the fun stuff. So I am not dressage.
The adventures that I know, I think pretty much all of them would agree with you on that.
Yeah. I mean, so what you're, the dressage is ideally supposed to be demonstrating, you know, harmony and finesse and a horse's ability to be adjustable and obedient. So you're showing the judge here that like, yes, I have this crazy war horse that can go tear it up, but when it's time, he'll come back to me and he'll listen and he'll turn at E if I tell him to. The accuracy, the adjustability, the finesse of the horse is really on display in dressage.
And it's so, I'm sure it's on purpose, but it's so wild to me that it's the first event too, because you have these horses who know what's coming up. Like they know that the jumps are approaching, and yet they have to go dance through this sandbox and be good, solid citizens for the, 3 to 4 minutes it takes to get through a test. And to me, that is almost more impressive than the maneuvers themselves, is watching these horses who you can tell just want to go tear it up, have to take that deep breath and have to do all those hard things while not exploding out of that arena, which is, in, as a hunter jumper, like a joke because it's, you know, 4 inches off the ground and these horses could step over it, but they don't. So I'm always very, very impressed by dressage, especially for that reason.
And I think that's actually like what makes it so tough is that your horse selection, you can't just have a fancy dressage horse because they have to be like level headed when you're in the big stadium knowing that cross country is tomorrow. So yeah, very different from classical dressage in that one, I think, and don't quote me on this, but I think that like when you get to like Kentucky 3-day, this is the highest 5-star level that eventing goes to, their dressage test, I think, is akin to like third level. So It's much less like fancy movements. Like you're not going to see Piaf at the 5-level or 5-star level, right? So it's more so establishing your score heading into the weekend. And another unique feature is that the scoring is backwards. So like where in dressage, you're trying to get the highest percentage possible. In eventing, you're trying to get the lowest dressage score possible to start you off into the weekend on a really low score. So lowest score wins, which is really interesting too.
Okay. So it's golf score for anybody who does other sports.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, dressage is tough. It's really tough. And it's also really hard to get an incredibly conditioned, super fit, lean horse that gallops 5 times a week preparing for endurance to, like you said, come back and stick with you and perform this really intense dressage test. So, yeah, I think that's what makes it so hard. It's in my opinion, it is like the hardest of the three. It is so challenging. And the good riders make it look easy.
Yeah, they really do. Because I've taken a few dressage lessons. Like cross training is so important for any equine athlete, horse or rider. And I have never been more humbled than I was by my genuinely very kind and very helpful dressage instructor. But man, there was so much that I was doing so wrong.
Yeah.
It was cool. I have a lot of respect for people who do that as like they're full time. I am a dressage rider through and through. And for people who are like, not only do I do dressage, but I do 2 other crazy intense things, which then takes us into the next phase. So cross country, which is like, I mean, that's the best, right?
I think so. I mean, the thing about dressage is that you really do have to be able to execute those movements. So the reason I think you asked like, oh, how crazy is it that it's first and then the other fun stuff happens later? I think another reason for that is that if you can't perform the movements that are required from you at the level that you're competing in the sandbox, you certainly shouldn't be out trying to run cross country, right? So the reason why they're adding lateral movement at, you know, preliminary or modified is because you're doing, you know, off kilter skinnies and you've got a bunch of stuff out on cross country that's requiring you to do lateral movements on cross country. So I think that it is adjacent. So the movements that are introduced in the sandbox are also things that you're going to see out on cross country and you're going to have to execute those at a really fast pace too. So yeah, cross country sometimes is next. Depending on the format of the show, sometimes they'll do show jumping second, but classically cross country would come second. So this is like speed, endurance, and jumping. Very fast pace. I mean, your pace increases with the level that you're riding at. You have an optimum time that you have to come in under. And also sometimes you get speed faults if you go too fast at some of the lower levels. So you have this optimum time that you're chasing. And you have all sorts of obstacles that you have to go over and through. And you're taking fences oftentimes out of stride at a fast pace. So it's showing agility and endurance and gall and bravery. You can certainly see the military roots when you're out watching cross country, especially like at Kentucky 3-day. It is wild to watch. Sometimes I have to like turn away. It's really intense.
I mean, having gone to the event and I've been able to go walk the course and like stand on the jumps and take photos in front of them. And granted, that's the pinnacle, right? So like you're not getting people who are jumping higher, faster, farther than that, but standing in front of those and just knowing that their riders are going out there and giving it their all and horses are absolutely flying over these, it was so, so crazy. Like, the ditches are huge. The spreads are huge.
You could like fit a family of 5 in some of those fences. It's insane.
Easily.
I know.
Easily. And like, I've done derbies. I've jumped a few cross country fences, but I've never done cross country. So like, I don't really know what that particular adrenaline rush is like, but There's just got to be something a little off kilter in your brain to be able to want to fly over those jumps at that speed, at that pace. And I respect and fear it so much.
Yeah, you have to be a little crazy. And I'll tell you what, whatever it was in my brain that desired to do that has slowly diminished since I had the baby. Okay, I left like going training level. Now I'm like, maybe starter fences look too big. Like, I know it's 20 inches off the ground, but like, so now my threshold is like, if
tall 20 inches.
They're tall 20 inches, if he can walk over it, I can jump it. That's my new rule. But yeah, I mean, there is, it's so intense.
Yeah. And I've said for years, like, if I, for anybody who doesn't know, like, my horse passed in 2018, love of my life, have not recovered yet to want to jump back into that. But I've always said that if/when I am ready, I want to buy like the world's safest, easiest, most straightforward eventing horse and do whatever the like log on the ground level.
I love this for you.
Have done it.
I love this for you.
Possible.
Yeah. When I got back into it,
I've used fences and arenas and a few more rules. So I need a starting point.
Fences that come down when you hit them is the important piece. But
ideally. Yes. Or like you said, like if my horse can walk over it, preferably blindfolded, then I feel real good about it.
Exactly. Yeah. When I got back into it as an adult, you know, after college and your first big girl job and you kind of like get your feet under you, I'm like, oh, I should start eventing again. And I started with the Amoeba log on the ground and it was a solid introduction back to the sport. But you know what's so interesting is like, and I know we're getting a little off topic right now, but so cool about the USEA is that the majority of the support for this organization comes from low-level amateurs. So like, we're the foundation of the sport. Like it is, you know, there are the absolute creme de la creme Olympic level riders out there, but the force behind the organization is low-level amateurs who want to do exactly what you're talking about, who are out there for fun. And I think
of every sport, and 100% backbone.
Yep.
And if you're an amateur out there, like I hope you feel really cool about the fact that you not only work a job, but then go and do this, which is for some people a full-time job. Like, that's cool as hell. People
Heck
can be very
yeah.
proud of themselves.
Power to the Ammies.
You can wear that badge like a badge of honor because it is.
Love it. Great shout out to the amateurs. We love you, amateurs. But yes, back to the task at hand.
Okay. So dressage and cross country mm-hmm. touched on a little bit. And I will say, like, I know cross country is very much fan favorite. For many riders, it's their favorite. And as much as I do love cross country, and it is the best, I love watching the show jumping for maybe the same reasons as other people, but will you give us like a, you know, the overview on like what the show jumping and eventing looks like?
Yeah, of course. So it's different than what you would think of in the jumpers because there's no like not a speed round. So you start with your dressage faults and to that you go out on cross country. If you have a stop on cross country, you add a 20, two stops is 40 on and on. If you have time, I think it's like 0.4 seconds or 0.4 added per second. And then if you hit a frangible, it's 11. And I think there's some other random things that you can collect points for, like hitting a flag.
At home, what's a frangible?
Oh, I'm sorry. So like in the last decade or so, there have been like a considerable amount of pretty intense injuries that have happened on cross country. And the USEA has put an incredible amount of resources, money, time, effort behind implementing extreme safety measures on cross country. One of them is the frangible technology, which actually allows some of the fences to come down when horses hit them. And they have found that there's been a very large decrease in rotational falls because of that, which is huge. And rotational falls are obviously like the worst thing that could possibly happen out there. So if a horse hangs a leg, the frangible falls, they're able to recover, hopefully, right? So, but if you take down a frangible, you do collect 11 points. So you come out of cross country with your new score, right? Which is your dressage score plus any faults that you've collected on cross country. And now you head into show jumping, and this is what's going to define who wins their division, right? So there is no, we're not going for speed like we would in jumpers. There is an optimum time, same as you would see on cross country, and you do collect 0.4. I think I'm talking honest here. I think you collect 0.4 for every second that you go over the optimum time, but the focus here is leaving all the jumps up. So you collect faults for every pole that you knock down or refusals. And I never really understood because a refusal is the same faults as having a rail, which I hate, but anyhow.
If a horse tries and messes up a little bit, it would be less.
I know. I've never understood it.
Poor thing that we couldn't even jump it.
I've never understood it. Cross country is 20 for a stop. And yeah. I've never, I feel like as a kid, it was more. I can't, you know, maybe I'm going crazy. I feel like when I was a kid, it was like 10 for a stop on show jump. Maybe I'm nuts. But yeah, in stadium, it is the same amount of faults for a stop as it is a pole. and you're adding 4 for every fault that you have, and then you finish on that whatever score you finish after stadium. So the point of this, I think back in like the military world, the point was like to go out on cross country, which used to be like 5 phases, roads and track, steeplechase, like it was like a whole thing. And I want to say it was like close to a marathon in length by the time the horse was done with their day. So then show jumping, you're coming back and showing like, yes, even after my horse ran a marathon, he is still with me, sound, sane of mind, and he can come back and show that finesse. And to me, show jumping is really just dressage over fences. Like you're having to really do a lot of adjusting, movement, lateral movement, stay with me, be in my hand, be under my legs, sit down. So I think it's a demonstration of like, I can go out and do the crazy stuff. And then I come back into the sandbox and I'm with you and I'm paying attention and I'm obedient. So, and again, in some of the formats, they do swap show jumping and cross country. I'm not quite sure why. I think some trains of thoughts have thought like if a horse gets a CR, which is like a compulsory retirement, like you took too many poles down, they won't send you on to cross country. So I think it could be a safety measure to like not put people out on cross country who aren't ready for it. But yeah, those are the phases.
Which is pretty incredible. That's a huge endeavor. That's very different yes. from a dressage or a hunter jumper show where we go, we sign up for a few classes, we, you know, have a nice time, we call it a weekend. And that's yeah. obviously a gross oversimplification. I know I was out there.
But I hear you. Yeah.
But like, it's a totally different world and it's totally different in like the amount of effort that has to go into having, for some people, 3 different saddles, 3 different bit setups, 3 different, you know, leg protection and equipment totally. That you use. Like it's a very different beast. But from what I've understood from talking to folks across disciplines, cross country and eventing specifically seem to be like places where communities really come together and shine and are very, very supportive. And I felt that at the Kentucky 3-Day as a spectator. So I'm hoping that you also have felt that when you've gone and you've competed and helped and done things like that too.
Oh, I mean, okay, maybe it's just because I'm an amateur and I do low level eventing and it's not like my entire personality, but I truly do find it to not be like super competitive. Like everyone's competing against themselves. And I mean, obviously we all want to do well, right? We're spending a lot of money to do this, but I feel like the community is very strong. I don't find it to be catty. And I feel like everyone truly does want to help each other. And it's a super encouraging environment. And I really love it. Cross country has become so popular, actually, that there is, I'm going to butcher trying to explain what this is, but there is a new discipline of just cross country. And yes, it just popped onto the scene, like, I don't know, within the last maybe year or two. And I don't know too much about it, but it exists. And they've kind of changed the format of how you collect points and such. But like people love it that much that they just want to do cross country. We used to call those fox hunters.
Right? There we go. We had that before.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's also worth noting that like this is not like polo where you have a string of ponies. This is the same pair, the same horse and rider doing all 3 of these phases together within those 3 days. So it really is quite a test of trust and partnership and reliability and discipline. I mean, there's just so much that goes into it, and trusting your horse enough to kill you, but knowing that they won't is like so crazy. It's really, really crazy. And it, like I said before, like when you have a kid too, it changes your mindset and you're like, man, I better really trust this horse if I'm going to. And my first show back on Andy, I was like, oh my God, no one I'd rather do it on. So your partner becomes more than just like your show buddy. I mean, this is like an animal that you're really putting all your faith into.
Yeah. And I think, I'm sure it's, and you'll tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like it's very rider dependent on exactly what kind of horse you're looking for. I think some people want that, like, no preservation skills, just balls to the walls. Like,
totally.
I got this. I'm, you know, full of steam ahead. And some riders want that a little bit more careful, a little bit more like, hey, buddy, we can push the pace a little bit kind of horse. But tell me a little bit about, like, because you have 2 eventing horses
yes.
right now.
Yeah.
What is it that you think kind of like goes into an eventing horse? Like, what are you looking for? What are your friends looking for?
Yeah.
What makes an event horse?
I mean, everyone has a different opinion on this, right? What the first thing I'm going to say about an event horse is I think eventing is so cool because it's not a dressage test. It's not a dressage competition, and things can go haywire after dressage. So you can have a 6-figure Grand Prix dressage horse come in there and score a 12 and be in first place and right, and then go out on cross country and can't get past the first fence. So like sure. having that versatility is really cool. I personally, and a lot of people disagree with me here, I personally am of the train of thought that I would rather be in last place after dressage, but no, I'm coming home without a 20. Like, having a horse that goes out on cross country and you know they're going to go clean and be scrappy and they're going to figure it out and like they're going to do the hold my beer thing when you put them in a tight spot. And that is how Andy is. Like, it is very much so, like, if I don't have the answer, he does. And he has so much more experience than I do at everything that we do. So, I mean, he is very nice in the sandbox. Like, it's me who gets in his way. So, like, he is a nice dressage horse when he's having a good day. But knowing that he's super reliable on cross country to me is obviously the most dangerous phase. And he's but he's also a draft cross. So, like, show jumping is not his.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. He's a Belgian thoroughbred. Mm-hmm.
Dang, good for him.
Yes. So, like, he's not, you know, show jumping is not his strong suit. He is not super careful with his feet. And if I put him in a bad spot, we're going to take a rail. Right. So, but, you know, you give some, you win some, you lose some. And so in my personal opinion, I'm like, I would rather go out on cross country, know I'm going to come home safe. And, you know, we take a ding here in dressage or we take a rail there. And a lot of people believe, like, I'd rather have the really nice bloodlined warm blood who's going to clean up in dressage, and I can teach them cross country. I can teach them to be brave. I can teach them that part, right? In my place in life right now, I'm not teaching anybody anything. Like, I'm barely finding the time to get to the barn, you know, 4 days a week. So I certainly need that, like, schoolmaster. But some folks have, you know, professionals that are out there that are like, yeah, I'll bring this baby along. They're going to teach them the ropes and having really important bloodlines at that point. You know, like a Boyd Martin bringing along his new little thoroughbred, like, hit what he was looking for was the potential. And he's like, I'll teach him everything else.
There's something really cool about what you said with Andy, where at every phase, your partnership is slightly different. In the dressage ring, you're trying to get out of his way.
Totally.
In this country, you're there holding on, supporting every decision he makes and inputting when you think it's
totally
wild. And then on show jumping, you're sitting back and you're really helping him make the right decisions to be successful. And I think there's something really cool about that, because, like, with my horse going to the Hunter Jumper ring, I knew what horse I had under me. He knew what rider he had. And we had the same role more often than not with how we were, you know, relying on each other and working together as a partnership and as a team. But for you guys, like, it is different through every phase. And like you said, with riders, like, they're going to want a different horse on how they want a partner. Like, some people are going to want that horse on cross country where they're like, don't worry, I'm brave enough for the both of us, but you're athletic and we can get it done. Or
totally.
Somebody's gonna want that show jumping horse where it's like, you're so careful. As long as I'm getting us to the base, we've got this. And I think this is something really cool that, like, for almost any horse that wants to event, there's a rider that can event with them and vice versa. And that's really cool.
Absolutely. I love that. And I think that one of the most redeeming qualities, and this is like a joke that I've had with, like, all of my friends, like, oh, where'd you get your event horse? Like, oh man, I bought him behind a Taco Bell for $5. Like, eventing, like, anyone can event. Like, you can take any horse. I mean, now granted, you might not be, you know, running prelim or advanced, but, like, sure, if you want to do beginner, novice, or novice, like, anybody can grab almost any horse that is sound and figure out a way to make it happen. Now, you may not be winning, but, like, you're gonna, like, you can go do that. And I think that that's really neat, because we're watching so many different disciplines become, like, very pay to play. And I think eventing is really resisting that, because it does require so much versatility. Like, there's obviously talent that goes into it, but a lot of it is discipline and heart. And we're watching a lot of horses with big hearts that maybe don't have the best conformation or don't have the best bloodlines really excel. There's a girl in my area who is an upper level trainer, and she ran, like, a one-eyed horse with kissing spine around advanced, like, very successfully. So I think it is really, really cool that, like, anyone and everyone can participate in the sport.
I think it's Jenny Brannigan, who's another of our riders for, like, Team Smart Equine, who said something to the effect of, like, I ride the horse, not the papers.
Totally.
Because one of her big event horses maybe doesn't look so great if you were, like, trying to do an intensive PPE on him for sale. But she's had him so long. She knows his heart. She knows his soundness. She knows what keeps him going. And she's like, I ride the horse, I don't ride the papers. And she's obviously incredibly successful, and her horses are, like, very, very well cared for and at the top of the sport for a very long time. So I think there's something really, yeah, like you said, $5 behind a Taco Bell. Okay,
totally.
Like, do you have the heart? Then we're going to figure it out.
100%. Like, the mental grit, the stamina, you know, obviously there are some breeds that are more indicated for excelling through the levels. I mean, we're watching more and more thoroughbreds turn up in these 5 stars, you know, a lot of Irish horse. I know.
It used to be all thoroughbreds.
Like, it's nice to see it
for a while.
Yep. And then they took out that endurance phase.
Yeah, but now it's nice to see them come back and really show how they can shine. And
I know,
maybe not a pure thoroughbred, maybe it's part blood, maybe it's half blood, but, like, seeing them come back has been such.
I agree. I totally agree. So like seeing the thoroughbreds come back to the top, amazing. But you know, we always have those little outliers. Remember like Teddy O'Connor, Tiny Little Pony, and Karen rocketed him around. I mean, that was so cool. So like, again, like anyone can do it. Yes. A legitimate pony. Reading Karen's accounts of like galloping up to these fences that were like legitimately as tall as he was. Like, man, she's got balls of steel for sure.
I would have had to wear multiple layers of diapers.
Yeah, you and me both. You and me both. Man, I would have to wear multiple layers of diapers doing that on a horse that wasn't 14 too. So like, let me tell you. Yeah. So, I mean, it truly is like the heart, the mental toughness, and obviously like they're in peak performance fitness, right? So having a horse that is able to keep fit year round, or I suppose if you're competing year round, but achieve really peak levels of fitness is really important too. And then having a horse and rider, like you had mentioned earlier, that really match in how they like to go. You know, having a kick ride on with a rider that hates to use their leg all the time, I'm like, maybe not, it's going to work. So having a horse that, like, you know, you really do find yourself compatible with, I think is important as well.
And for these horses at any level, right, like at the, you know, you can step over it blindfolded, mm-hmm. or at the Kentucky 3-Day, I imagine like for your barn, there's a whole bunch of different horses. But for your horses, because they are eventers, like we're a supplement company, I'm going to ask it, are you supplementing them specifically for the job?
I think so. So, I mean, obviously, like one thing that we are up against quite a bit is that the USEA, the amount of shows in the USEA has gone down over the last, you know, 15 or so years. So most amateur riders that are not in Aiken or Ocala or Virginia, we're like in random states with maybe like one or two USEA sanctioned shows that are within, you know, a 5-mile or a 5-hour drive of us. So we're traveling a lot. Like if you want to compete and you're in random states without sanctioned shows, you have to haul to them, and they're typically not close. So the first thing you're going to think of is like the stress of taking your horse all over the country to go to these shows. And then you're also thinking about the types of loads that are being expected to be placed on their bodies. Like you're doing a lot of conditioning because cross country requires that they be in really good condition. So you're doing a lot of gallop sets, a lot of trot sets, a lot of hill work. So the first thing that comes to my mind is gastric ulcers and joint health. So those are the two things that I really focus on. And then I don't have to tell you this, but I keep them on magnesium year round. I do boost it up in the summertime. So I did just double everybody's Smart and Simple magnesium as the springtime comes in right now, but I keep them on Smart Perform Advanced Liquid, and I have Andy on Smart Stride Senior. So I'm really focused on their gut health, really focused on their joint health. And then as indicated, sometimes I'll do Adequan in the middle of the show season if we need to. And as we talked about in, you know, past episodes, I'm also like a big fan of body work and chiropractic manipulation. So I keep that on the docket too.
Yeah, all of that makes sense. And I know for a lot of people, like electrolytes and drinking is a really big thing. So along with Smart Lights, as like we have it, you know, as a pellet and as a powder, and for other electrolyte supplements, we also have it as a paste. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure you've said before that Andy does not drink this, but every other horse I know does Gallagher's water and other additives.
Yes.
To help encourage horse drinking. I've heard are also really, really big ones in the communities for those horses.
Yes. Yeah. Gallagher's water, I think Quench, like there's a couple out there. I mean, even sugar-free Gatorade, lots of different ways to get your horse to be drinking. And especially like we see like AECs coming into Kentucky at the end of August, early September. So it is like hot, hot, hot in peak eventing time. So keeping your horses well hydrated is super important to that as well. And I actually really like the paste because I think that it's rapidly absorbed and you can use it only when you need it. So if you have your horse like with a salt lick in their stall or on like a Smart Salt supplement, but then you want to up the ante after cross country or after a gallop set when your horse is really hot and you know they're losing those really vital minerals and vitamins, I think that the paste makes a really good case for itself in those instances too.
Yeah, absolutely. Paste should definitely get a little more love on
I agree.
Some of our like media and shares than it normally does. That's a really great one to have.
Just
have it in your back pocket at all times kind of thing.
I totally agree. And some that I have not necessarily had to use, but I know do have a place in the sport as well, could be, you know, flare strips on the nose, Smart Breathe Ultra. We know that when horses are moving at such a high rate of speed for such a long time, I mean, we're talking like some of these courses are 6, 7, 8, 9 minutes long, and they're moving at like a full blown gallop that whole time, helping them to increase that oxygen carrying capacity, ensuring that their lungs are able to get everything that they possibly can out of that air that they're breathing is super important too. So that endurance. And then, of course, post-workout, too, you want to make sure that your horses are getting all of the amino acids replaced afterward. So increasing their intake of protein can be super helpful, putting them on a ration balancer that is high in protein, like Grow and Win, making sure they're getting, you know, free choice access to forage, and sometimes even alfalfa, depending on what the demand is. Like, you know, obviously my little starter beginner novices are not going to need that. But, you know, as they continue moving up the levels, their energy demands are going to change too.
Yeah, that makes sense. And even for some of those horses who are maybe not at the top level of the sport, if they just need the boost, if they need the energy, if they're a little bit older and they're coming out here and putting in the work, give them whatever they need.
Listen, I try to supplement mine like they're running Kentucky 3-day, and I do my best. And most of the time they get ridden 3 days a week. So you know what? I'm doing my best over here. At least they eat like kings.
Great.
That's right. That's right.
And then speaking of the Kentucky 3-day, I know we've touched on it a couple of times. Pinnacle of the sport, one of the 2 5-stars in the U.S. along with Ireland, right?
Yep.
And it was
yep.
the only for a long time.
So yes.
It's a very, very storied, very historied event in the United States. The Smart Equine team goes every year. We'll touch on that in a little bit. But with that, we also have sponsored riders that go. And I definitely want to just touch on them a little bit because they're pretty cool. And we've worked with them for a long time. We've mentioned them already. Boyd Martin, who is at the time of this podcast, either number one or number two for Eventers in the World, which is a crazy cool accolade to be able to say. And Jenny Brannigan, who has been at the top of the sport for years and years and is just, she's a wicked badass in her own right in so many ways, too. So they'll be out there this year. I think Jenny's bringing at least one. Boyd's probably got like whatever the max amount of horses you're allowed to bring. Is what he's the man does not stop or
he doesn't.
Slow down regardless.
No, no.
And something that I think is really cool about what we get to do with working with them is it's not just like, you know, we send them a coat and they give us a thumbs up. Like they've been using our supplements with their horses for years and years. So shameless plug. I know Boyd feeds Smart Combo to a lot of, if not all of his horses. Jenny is a huge fan of the vitamin E, and I'm pretty sure they both feed Smart Lights. So if you're going to be at the event and you have any questions on like what these top level eventers are feeding their horses, definitely stop by and ask our team. I think we bring some samples of, I think it's Bruno's Smart Pack with us. So you can even like feed your horse what Bruno gets for a day or two with the free samples. So that's pretty cool. But from what you know as an eventer, and I'm not calling you a low-level eventer. I was calling you an eventer.
No, I am. You can call me what I am. You're not going to hurt my feelings.
No, you're not doing that. If you're doing the thing, you are the thing. You are an eventer.
So okay, thank you. Thank you.
And like with your experience and going to shows, like what can you tell us about what it takes to, you know, get a horse there and prepared? We talked a little bit about prep and recovery, but like what else can you give us on insights for what's going into all of this behind the scenes?
So I'd say that the first thing that goes into preparing for a big event, like we're not talking like a week out preparing. We're talking about like, this is what you're spending your winter and spring doing if you know you're going to be showing in the summertime is conditioning. So that obviously is going to change based on what level you're going to be riding at. And, you know, depending on what level you're riding at also is how fast you're going to be going on cross country. But you need to be conditioning your horse regardless, right? So if they are going beginner novice or if they are running a 5-star, you better be out doing your trot sets, doing your galloping sets, doing your hill work, making sure that you're setting your horse up for success. Because as we've talked about in previous episodes, the number one reason horses get injured is because they are not adequately prepared physically to do the task that you are asking them to do, right? So getting out and, quote, pounding the pavement, riding them on uneven ground is going to help their soft tissues and bones react to uneven ground. If you ride your horse in an arena every day and then you get out on the, you know, on the trails and you wonder why they're bowing a tendon, you know, you have to be emulating the environment that you're going to be riding in. So cross training, getting out on the trails, going for trot sets, making sure that you're properly conditioning your horse, you know, doing, we love to do a lot of long and low work to help them really pull their bellies up and work over their back. So it's not drilling, you know, each discipline every day. It's a lot of, you know, some people like to do like in-hand long lining, helping them, you know, there's so much that go into trying to condition your horse properly. Respiratory conditioning, musculature conditioning, brain conditioning. Like I know Andy, and I'm guilty of this, but like when Andy gets out on cross, we have a beautiful cross country course across the street from my barn. And when he gets out there, it's like this like switch flips. And even if we are going out for like a leisurely bareback trail ride, he's like, what is going on? I am ready. Let's go. And he gets what I call like his chicken walk and his like, he like can't like, okay. So I'm like, bro, we got to work on like, come back to me. Just cause we're out here does not mean that we're going balls to the wall right now. So getting them out into the environment that they're going to be competing on, to make sure that they are mentally prepared for what they're going to see, introducing elements like water and banks and ditches and making sure that their brains are keen on what they're about to encounter during the show season. So I'd say conditioning of mind, body, spirit, all of the above, to make sure that they are in peak physical and emotional fitness and ready to go when summertime rolls around.
Yeah, super, super important call out. I'm really glad that we started with that.
As like a true amateur low-level person, just multiply what I'm about to say by financially 100, by emotionally 100, resources 100. So like it's pretty crazy because I mentioned that a lot of this you have to travel for. So your horses are traveling, you are traveling. We're talking about the logistics of getting them there. I know last year AECs was in Temecula at Galloway Downs. Like people were flying their horses across the country. So like they're, it's intense. There's a lot of travel that is involved, and these shows can be super few and far in between. Then you have like your air. So the country is broken up into different areas. And I'm in Area 4, and people will have their areas all around the country. And then you have within your area your own championships that you typically have to drive for. And then you have one American Eventing Championships at the end of the year. And it kind of it rotates around the country, changing. This year it will be at the Kentucky Horse Park in Lexington. Right. People in California have to fly to the Kentucky Horse Park in Lexington, right? So it does require a lot of logistics. If you're driving, you're having to, you know, take your horse across the country. You're planning stopover barns. Where are we going to take them out? Are we going to do layover? Is it different? I mean, it is a lot of planning automatically right there. With the upper level people who are going to like Burley and badminton, they're flying across the pond. Like that is crazy. And the cost associated with flying a horse international, I don't even want to know because it's probably like more than I paid for my horse to begin with. So, I mean, the logistics alone, it's crazy. The logistics alone are, it's just admirable that, you know, these like Jenny and Boyd and Allison Springer and a lot of like, they're doing it. They're hopping across the pond, you know, two or three times a year.
Your horse or horses, if you've got more than one, like, again, it is three phases worth of gear.
Yeah.
As well.
Yep.
So like all the organization and getting all of your
insane
stuff there. Cause imagine getting across the pond, getting ready for your show jumping phase. You've already done two and you're like, where's the bit we use for show jumping?
Yeah.
Like I can't even
it's
imagine.
Intense. This is why like the grooms that work for these upper level riders, like we should be whittling them trophies because that is some pressure right there.
I'm pretty sure Boyd's groom Steph won like groom of the year. Probably for the last 500
stuff.
Years running, but very, very recently, if not last year. Like, she's incredible. Every groom team is just doing some truly amazing work, getting everybody organized and out there to do the job.
Yep, absolutely. With some of my girlfriends growing up, one of my close friends now, we were working students for Allison Springer when she was shortlisted for the Olympics, I think in like 2012. So they went over to England and man, like that is, it was, I mean, like getting to like hear their accounts of it firsthand, I mean, it's a serious, serious job. So the logistics alone is just brave. Like, good for you guys. Like, I can't even imagine the spreadsheets that they're having to put together. But then you account for, like, we've talked in past episodes about how important consistency is. And, like, you think these horses are experiencing any kind of consistency? Like, heck no, right? Like, the only thing that's consistent in their life is change. So they're learning and adapting to being on the go a lot. Their feeding regimens are having to accommodate that, right? Like you mentioned, Gallagher's water, keeping your horse drinking when they're on international flights, keeping them eating when they're on, you know, long road trips, making sure that you're keeping gastric ulcers at bay, their hydration status up. I mean, there's just so many factors that go into feeding a horse that is traveling that often. Now, granted, dressage horses and show jumping horses are certainly moving around the country just as much, but I think that the calorie and energy demand placed on a horse that's doing so much endurance work is just different. So feeding programs are so, so, so important. And then, of course, like recovery. Like I have dabbled a little bit in like traditional dressage. And it's fun because you go to a show, you can ride a couple different tests in a weekend, and then you can go back the next weekend and do it again. Now, granted, I'm talking like very low, like first level training level. But like with eventing, you certainly would not want to do back-to-back shows. I mean, these horses that are doing 3, 4, 5-star level shows, they're doing maybe one every 4 weeks, every 6 weeks, every 8 weeks. Like, this is not like we're doing back-to-back shows every weekend all summer. So there is quite a bit of recovery that's having to happen between these shows, giving your horse enough, you know, opportunity to recover from whatever strain was put on their bones, their musculature system. It's a lot. It's a lot of demand on their body. So it's important that we give them adequate time to rest.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost overwhelming just hearing you list it all out. So just major props to everybody who's doing it, whether you are amateur weekend warrior or at the pro level, like crazy, crazy cool. And I can only imagine, like you said, like you're multiplying it by 100.
Oh, I mean, like they can do every day. Insane. So the way that my trainer always likes to put it whenever I'm like, oh man, do you think I'm ready? It's like, okay, Ash, you're running beginner novice. But like the way we always put it is like beginner novice is like a 5K. Most people could hop up off their couch and go run a 5K tomorrow. They may not be super fast.
No, jog it or
at least jog it, right? They might be hurting in 2 days. Like they're going to be sore. Things are going to be rough. They're going to be like, but they're going to get it done. Now, most people cannot get out of bed tomorrow and go run a marathon. So that I think that is a good way of kind of demonstrating how it's this you're running regardless of what race you're in, you're running. So you're doing the same activity, but just at such a different capacity. So, you know, as you move up the levels, just imagine what it would be like as a human runner to do a 10K without adequate training or to do a half marathon without carb loading or, you know, so just trying to, you know, take that and imagine what it might be like as a human. And how much energy you would put into preparing and how seriously you would take your diet and exercise regimen depending on what type of feat was in front of you.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. And I appreciate the level of seriousness that people do take and put into to all of that at every level. It speaks very highly to the level of care that eventers, and I mean most riders, but eventers for this episode are putting into
totally
care and thought process. And I know for the Kentucky event, like they're doing, all these riders are doing that leading up to it. And our team is doing a ton of prep work in their own way leading up to it. So I want to give them just like a quick shout out here. But our team goes to the Kentucky 3-day event every year. We have a booth. We have a tailgate. So if anybody is headed in that direction, please go stop by and say hi. We have a really cool team there. Danielle from Smart Barns, who we talked to in the last episode. Definitely go listen to that if you have not yet. Her team is going to be there. So Kit and Megan and McCare, who help coordinate barn programs and supplements. They can give you free consults. They can answer questions. They can make changes to your regimen. They can give you some samples. There's going to be a treat bar. It's all sorts of good stuff. And then our veterinarian, who was on the first episode this year, Dr. Liz, is also going to be there doing some talks and answering some questions and things like that. They are so personable. They are so nice. They are so cool and educated. I would be remiss not saying like, hey, you should definitely go see them. I know that people are going to watch cross country live. I know people are going to see the dressage and cheer on their favorite eventers through the last show jumping phase, but try and stop by and say hi if you can. The tailgate is also very cool. I don't know where we are yet this year. I know in the past we've been like up the hill from the corgi jump. For anybody who's not seen it, yes, there's literally a jump that looks like a gigantic corgi splooting on top of like a water element. It is my favorite jump in the whole world. He is so cute. And so look up photos of that. And then we're like up the hill from that. The tailgate literally is a tailgate. We will have a licensed bartender. She's the coolest. We'll have prizes and all sorts of fun stuff. So it's really fun. The 3-day event is so special. There's people from every discipline. Like me, I'm a 100 jumper girly and I've been a couple of times because it's just so fun. The atmosphere is so cool. The people are all really just there to be horse nerds and dork out and be so excited watching these professionals go do crazy things, take photos on the cross-country course when it's done. The vendor village is amazing. You can go home with everything from a brand new engraved halter to like a really cute horse dress. Ask me how I know. I've come home with both things before. It's very worth going to. It's very worth stopping by and seeing our team. So that is my very long 30-second spiel on please go say hi to our team if you're going to go to the event, and please go to the event. Okay, so all of that said, I want to actually let it end with you, our resident eventer, and just tell us, like, in your experience, in your words, like, why does eventing matter? Like, what is this that makes it so special to you?
I mean, I think I've said it a few times throughout the show so far, but I think it is really spectacular that having you have to be a professional dabbler. You have to be, you and your horse both have to have the versatility to do three very different disciplines in the span of 3 days. And you don't have to be amazing at all three, but you have to be good enough. And I absolutely love the versatility that it requires. You mentioned cross training earlier. It demands cross training. You have no choice but to do cross training. So I think it really does produce, even if you don't intend to do high level eventing, I think that it does produce very well-rounded horses and riders that have a lot of different skill sets, which I think is very positive. And I also think that it matters because, like I said, it's open to so many different types of people. You're not being judged like you are in the hunter ring on your horse's way of going. You're being judged on, like, are you getting it done? Yes or no? And, you know, it's open to so many different people of different, you know, ages. I mean, you see tiny little kids. I mean, I'm sure that there are age requirements for USEA, but you're seeing like 8-year-olds out there, like kicking my butt. Okay. So you can be any age, you know, with any background, with any breed of horse, any age of horse, and you still have an opportunity to do something amazing. So I just think that that makes it so unique.
Yeah. I could not agree more. I love that take. I love that eventing is any horse and any rider sport. And I think that's a great final key takeaway for anybody out there who's like, should I try it? I mean, I've never tried it, but yeah.
Wait, but you should. I think this is your year, Jenna.
We'll see. We'll see if by the end, the last podcast episode this year, if I have maybe gotten out and sat on an eventing horse, but who knows? But if you're wondering, go out and do it. If you are currently an eventer, pat yourself on the back. If you are a low-level eventer, I want you to scratch the first two words. You are an eventer, and you should pat yourself on the back. And hopefully, we will see some of you guys at the Kentucky 3-Day this year, and let us know in the comments or on social media if you guys will be headed our way, and let us know if you have any questions or if we should prepare our team to say hi to anybody. And here we are again with a giveaway reminder. This one has been open the entire month of April, and we are still giving away a Smart Equine prize package, which includes a $25 gift card, travel blanket, and a thermos. So go ahead and enter for your chance to win. Just click or tap on the link in the podcast description, and that'll take you directly to our giveaway form. Or you can type it in yourself in your browser, www.smartequine.com/podcast giveaway. And remember, this is open all month long. So if you are listening to this in April of 2026, be sure to get your entry in, and good luck.
You can find links to today's guests and products in the show notes on your podcast player or on the website at www.smartpackequine.com/blog.
We are here twice a month on the 15th and the 30th, but in between, find us on Instagram and Facebook as Smart Equine or shop online at smartequine.com.
Until next time, stay smart, stay versatile,
and give your horse a cookie from us.